Before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. This is the SB Live Washington podcast, your weekly conversation about high school sports and the people who play them across the Evergreen State. Today, we're going to be breaking down five storylines to watch entering this fall high school sports season in Washington. And there's lots to chew on and learn about the statewide landscape. Continuing to bring you guys coverage on the site at scorebooklive.com/Washington and the SB Live Sports app, free wherever you download your apps. As always, I'm your host, Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live here in Washington. No Dan Dickow today. He's busy delivering five episodes a week of the ISO podcast. You can give that a listen and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. But with me today to talk about the most pertinent storylines entering this high school football season is the prodigal son of Tacoma. He's either your pal or mine or nobody's pal, depending on the week. Todd Millis, senior reporter with SB Live. Todd, how you doing?
Good, man. We are the last free weekend before WIAA regular season football starts. It's going to be fun being back in a football stadium and watching teams go at it and build all the way, hopefully, to long playoff runs. And hopefully we're going to have state playoffs too. So it's nice to be back having fall football, Andy.
Yeah, for the first time in 2 years. I mean, of course, the pandemic has shaped so much of this last year and a half that wiped out the fall football season last year. We'll get into just kind of what this season is going to look like with our five storylines here in a second. But you and I have been hard at work over the summer, bringing you guys preview content heading into the season. This is just one of those. Of course, we have top 10 breakdowns of each classification. We're counting down the top 50 teams with a deep dive look at each of those 50 teams, regardless of classification, across the state. By the time you're listening to this, those are steadily rolling out on the site. As I said before, scorebooklive.com/Washington. We'll have plenty of more between now and the first game of the season as well. So just stay tuned, subscribe to this podcast, and you will not be entertained. I guess that is probably not the cleanest way to say that, but you know, it stands true. So Todd, as far as these storylines go, let's just jump into them, because number one is just going to be the big dark cloud hanging over this whole season. Our first storyline we're going to take a look at is tracking the unpredictable impact of COVID-19. When football returned last spring, Todd, this was, before the vaccine. This is as the vaccine starting to get rolled out. There were a ton of rules. It was really tough on programs having to, practice in pods, start the season with much less actual practice time, especially in pads that teams were typically used to. And there were just a ton of rules to work through and to figure out. Players were required to wear masks on the field. No locker room access. games were limited, travel was limited, and now we're entering the fall season where this virus and this Delta variant is still here and still impacting programs. The rules look a little bit different, though. As you're talking to coaches and as you and I have kind of approached this preseason and the lead up to week one, how do you define the impact of COVID and just what you've seen so far and what we've seen so far in how it's landing within programs across the state?
Yeah, it's present. I mean, there's no question about it. And as we've seen already, this is, you know, we're talking of Friday. That's basically Jamboree weekend, the weekend before the opening of the regular season. And we were already seeing teams cancel games the first couple weeks. You know, you've talked about a few on Scorebook Live, but I mean, we're, you know, it's all over. It's small schools, it's large schools. This is, you know, we've talked about this, Andy. I went to a lot of 7-on-7 camps this summer where, you know, kids ran around like it was regular football. It was regular summer football, no masks, or just out catching passes, having fun. And now with this variant that's started to kind of rear its ugly head, I think we're headed to more masks. I think that's inevitable. In terms of the players kind of policing themselves, you know, I've talked to a couple coaches and a couple coaches that took kind of a straw poll of their players and how many of them were vaccinated. It's in areas that you wouldn't expect to see large numbers vaccinated, to be honest with you. And these are two state contending teams, and both coaches expressed pleasant surprise on how many of their players were vaccinated. And I think you're going to see that might be a theme, especially with the teams that think they can go and do damage and make deep playoff runs, win league championships, and possibly contend for state. Is they don't want to be the cause. They don't want to be the ones that let their team down. They don't want to be the cause of you know, a shutdown and just sort of jeopardizing games and things like that. But we're going to see this. We're going to see this. You know, not everybody runs their program like John Eagle did at Camas or Dave Miller at Lakes, you know, where it's a program. And there's some teams that are going to be loose about it on protocols and things. That's just the nature of the beast. And so we're going to see a lot of ups and downs with this. Do I think that the WIA state playoffs are in jeopardy? I don't think so. I mean, we've had to overcome a lot to get to this point to press a reset button. And while we'll have protocols in place, I just don't see the state plus everything made possible. Mick Hoffman will do it to make sure that we have WIA state playoffs come November.
There's a lot I want to get into off of what you just said, Todd. I'll link this story in the show notes here in this episode. But Lake Stevens, which is the number two 4A team, our number two 4A team entering the season, and Spanaway Lake, the number three 3A team, both already have had to shut down and cancel the first two games of their season because of two positive tests within Lake Stevens' program and three within Spanaway Lake. Now, it wasn't the positive test, though, Todd, that wiped out the program and put them into a shutdown. It was the contact tracing that determined and produced a long list of players that are considered close contact. Now, close contact, this is all outlined by the Department of Health's guidance that was sent out a couple weeks ago. I can link that in the show notes as well. That's the same guidance that said that football players and no fall sports have to wear masks during competition. It also tells programs how to navigate a positive case or a flare-up in COVID. And it's really, you know, once this Lake Stevens and Spanaway Lake once these shutdowns and cancellations dropped this week as we record this, it put a lot of coaches on notice and a lot of coaches in an uneasy situation where vaccinated players just have an easier path at staying eligible and not being put into quarantine. Because if you're not vaccinated, the Department of Health says in its guidelines, you are essentially looped in. If you're deemed close contact, you are to quarantine no matter what. 14 days. And with vaccinated players, if you're not exhibiting symptoms, the quarantine is not required. This is, of course, because the vaccine has been proven as safe and effective. Not perfect at limiting the spread of COVID, but safe and effective. And this puts coaches in a really interesting spot because, you know, this vaccine, like we've seen in the NFL, like we've seen in college in the lead up to those seasons, teams with higher vaccination rates have a competitive advantage now against teams with lower vaccination rates. And so if you're a coach, how are you approaching that? Do you see it as your duty to, you know, whether it's, do you push the vaccine? A lot of coaches I'm talking to just see it as their obligation to not necessarily push the vaccine, but to essentially communicate that, hey, this is a competitive advantage. So I think, in summary, I think we're going to see week to week, we might see some cancellations. That's just going to be something we're tracking all year, Todd. And we also are going to see players and programs that are really, really strict about following these rules. Because if you're not, especially as you get later into the season, canceling good chunks of your season would, you know, be a huge problem. And that would put maybe not the entire playoffs at jeopardy at first, as we've seen in other states that have successfully done these playoffs. But having to cancel those games could put your own team at jeopardy. So that's the dark cloud that's looming over. And we just, you know, I hate to talk about COVID every time. It's like it's just loomed over sports for the last year and a half since the onset, since the 2020 state basketball tournament. But we're still here, Todd. This is still the reality.
Yeah, and, you know, having covered a few football teams, you answered the question, is it a coach's obligation to go to his players and say, get vaccinated. Don't jeopardize the season. And I think they can do that. You know, are there coaches out there that will directly address their players and go, yeah, you guys need to get vaccinated. Absolutely. We know who they are. Are there coaches that will let their captains police the situation? Will there be coaches who bring their captains in for a private meeting and go, okay, guys, this is the issue that's looming over us. We need to be best equipped for this as possible. Go get it done. So there are a number of ways I think football coaches, especially in mass player type teams, can go about doing this. Again, I think the contending teams, the teams that have legitimate shots of making, you know, winning league championships or deep runs, I think you're going to see those teams do everything possible to keep their seasons intact and their championship hopes intact. So I tell people it's almost like a rough landing on an airplane. It's going to be another rough landing this fall with COVID. Just hope that by November and December, we're going to be able to crown a state champ, you know, crown six state champions.
I've heard just, you know, anecdotally and from coaches that teams have as low as 15% vaccination rate. I've also heard teams that have an overwhelming majority of their players vaccinated. So it's really going to run the gamut. The big piece of this is I think this puts coaches in a really interesting situation when players have to certify with their schools whether they're vaccinated or not. That's just how it is. And so, you know, as a coach, how do you approach that? And a lot of coaches, you know, it starts with just making sure that those protocols are in place to where you're limiting that what's considered close contact and that 15-minute close contact period. In the confines of a football practice, I think the spring taught a lot of coaches that there are ways around, having everybody in close contact all the time. So that's our first storyline. Moving on to the second, I'm going to ask you this, Todd. Is the 3A state title going to be captured by a perennial power or a newcomer on an upswing? I say that because teams like Yelm, Spanaway Lake, Seattle Prep, teams that have been playoff teams, had tremendous spring seasons and bring back a ton of key pieces. Will one of those teams win state? Can they break through and do it? Or is it going to be a traditional power like an O'Day, a Bellevue, a Lincoln, a Lakes, or a lot of these 3A programs that we just know have strong programs and are going to be there year in and year out?
Yeah, I'm not going to be the one that bucks history here or goes against history. You look at 3A over the years, Andy. I mean, look at the teams that have won 3A state championships over the years. You know, Bellevue, Eastside Catholic, O'Day, Skyline, Ferndale, Prosser, Capital in the 90s with Wayne Sartoon, Lakes. You know, I mean, these are traditional powerhouses. You could kind of maybe argue that Kamiakin coming through with two losses in 2016 and that great run through the playoffs. They beat O'Day in the championship game. They beat Eastside Catholic in the playoffs as well. It was maybe a little bit of a surprise, but that was a really good team. That's a really good program over the course of time. I think you'd have to go back. I mean, this is when I was a junior in high school, Andy. The last time a team that maybe isn't a traditional power went on and won the 3A state championship, and that was Liberty of Issaquah with Tom Ingles. Now, Tom Ingles, if people don't know, made great runs with Kentwood, made a run to the state semifinals with Puyallup. He's a fantastic coach, Hall of Fame type coach. So 1988, they went 13-0 and beat Cheney in the championship. In fact, they shut him out in the championship game, 31-0. So went all the way back to 1988, where a traditional power did not win a 3A state championship. So who is it for me? I mean, as much as I like Yelm and I like Seattle Prep, and I really applaud the program, you know, that the jobs that those coaches have done, I'm not going against O'Day. I'm not going against Eastside Catholic. I'm not picking against Lakes. You know, Lincoln and their recent surge can find some traction at any time.
You're right, Todd. Four of the last six state champions have been Eastside Catholic. The other 2 years was Kamiakin, as you said, and O'Day. And so, you know, not exactly a lot of newcomers and surprises there recently. Of course, coming off of that run by Bellevue, which a couple of those titles were vacated. So I just look at what O'Day did in the spring, coming off of, you know, having a really strong team entering the season, getting blanked in week one by Eastside Catholic, and look at how the scripts flipped throughout the season with O'Day building and surging and taking those incremental steps as a program that are so key to what Monty Kohler has built and done over there and operates that thing to where, you know, Seattle Prep has this great surge in the middle of the year, beating Eastside and O'Day in back-to-back weeks. And by season's end, we were both looking at that Metro League title game between Prep and O'Day going, man, O'Day is just a gauntlet right now. I mean, there's the gauntlet is swinging one way, and it's just tough to see anything getting in the way of that and being formidable. And I think, you know, that's what makes O'Day the overwhelming favorite coming into this year, in my view, in our view at SB Live. But again, there is so much talent in these teams and so much hunger at a team like Spanaway Lake. If it can get over the hump of missing its first two games of the season, which would have tested it, if, you know, a team like Seattle Prep just has so much senior leadership and genuine talent. And, you know, this is a short off season, you know, so will those teams be able to kind of capture lightning in a bottle and spin it forward and keep this thing rolling? You know, I'll be fascinated. So moving on to number three, our number three storyline of the season, we're going to jump up to the 4A big school landscape. This is a team that we've been talking about since the spring. Todd, how does Graham Kapausen handle this 4A favorite role? They enter with bringing back the most of any team in 4A, running the table in the spring. Is this a team you see running the table here now in the fall?
It's going to be interesting. It's been, you know, Graham Kapausen has not been in this situation before. Now, Eric Curley has been in this situation before at Bethel when they were the number one ranked team in the state, and they did not win a state championship that year. But I ask Eric about how they're managing expectations and how are they managing, you know, the fact that they're the clear favorite in 4A and that everybody's talking about them. And I want to tackle two parts of their team that I think will be key in the Eagles, not only taking care of a really good 4A SBSL, but taking care of business in the state playoffs. I mean, the first one is their quarterback, and Josh Wood. He's a point guard for the basketball team. A year ago at this time, you know, he was an unknown that was about to go to the Northwest Nine, hadn't thrown a football for a couple of years, was just getting back into playing the quarterback position, impressed at the Northwest Nine. And then last spring, you and I both saw him, and he was phenomenal. He, in his first year being a varsity, starting varsity quarterback, in terms of just running the offense, but more importantly, always playing composed, under control, and not flustered. It was a sight to behold. Now it's his team. It's his offense. He's the one that's running the show. His leadership is vital on that offense in keeping everybody, a lot of playmakers, you know, their heads into it and keeping perspective that, you know, not everybody's going to get 10 receptions a game, or you're not going to get 30 carries a game if you're, you know, Jalen Davenport. It's just about winning football games. Now, if somehow something happened to Josh Wood, they also have a couple twin brothers that have a real nasty edge to them on the defensive line. They also play in the offensive line, but they're going to go to college at Idaho State as defensive linemen. They're kind of the tone setters of this whole team. They're the guys that nobody wants to mess with.
You're not gonna name check Curtis and Hunter Hill.
I'm gonna name them, of course.
All right, well let's just get that part out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, these are the guys that are, you know, in practices this in training camp here that, you know, are being yelled at by coaches for, you know, going past the whistle. And I mean, if somebody gets a big head on this team, or if somebody's talking about me, I have no doubt about it. And you know this. Just in humankind, it's those quiet ones that you worry about the most. And Curtis and Hunter Hill don't have a lot to say. They just go out there and they play and they let their actions do the talking. But in the most important moments, make no mistake, those two young men will stand up and set the record straight. And so the combination of those two and Josh Wood on the offensive end, I just don't see this team letting it sort of get away from them mentally, emotionally. You know, the talent's undeniable. I mean, we watched it at the FSP air game. The stars of the show were largely Graham Kapowsin kids. They are the overwhelming favorite to me in 4A. I don't see anybody beating them. I think they're going to run the table. I think they're going to fulfill expectations, and I think they're going to send Eric Curley off to the sunset a winner.
Well, and the key piece of this that undergirds exactly why Graham Kapowsin is the 4A favorite is just how much talent it has across the board and how much depth it has. And depth in a year like this, where a position group can get zapped through contact tracing in the snap of your fingers, is going to be key. And so you look at the teams that have those big rosters, that have players capable and coached up to step up into roles and versatility too. So that bodes well for the Eagles this year. This will be, you know, certainly one to watch in the SPSL, which is the, you know, maybe the toughest 4A league in the state this season, and in the non-league too. All right, moving on to number four. We're going to open this up a little bit, Todd. This is a trends storyline. Schools east of the mountains have only won a big school title, and big school, I mean 4A, 3A, 2A, six times in the last decade out of 30 chances. Will a big school east of the mountains do it? Will a big school east of the mountains win a state title in 2021? What do you think?
Well, I was just sitting here bubbling about Graham Kapowsin, and I think they're gonna finish the deed, and this is their year. And then I'm gonna probably say something that feels like a total contrast to that. No, I think the team that has the best shot of winning it all from the east side is a team that's won it, and they've won it recently in 4A, and that's Gonzaga Prep Bullpups. Dave McKenna knows how to get a team going. They run that very unique offense. You don't see it very often in 4A, the triple option. You know, Ryan McKenna is a senior. We all know how tough he is. He's grown up in that offense. He's going to be asked to run the ball a lot. He's a better passer than he was 3 years ago. They have a great defensive line. They just have a lot of pieces and a style that I think make 4A contenders nervous. And so, you know, if they can get out of the GSL, it's no picnic getting out of that district with the crossover with the 4A NCC, as you know, Andy. But if they get in the field of 16, this is a team that should be able to do some damage if they can stay healthy, if their offensive line gels, because they have the pedigree, they have the championship coach, they have the style, and they have a senior quarterback, and not a lot of 4A teams have a returning quarterback, as we talked in previous podcasts. So that's my bet. If somebody's going to come from Eastern Washington to win a state championship, it's Gonzaga Prep. I hope the Grand Capows and Eagles of 5 minutes ago can forgive me for saying that.
As I look at things and I hear you say that, Todd, I'm thinking about how much praise I just heaped on O'Day and what it brings back as the 3A favorite. But I think the team across all classifications, big school classifications, that might be best equipped to win a state title east of the mountains is in 3A, and that's Kennewick. Randy Affolter came over after more than 20 years at Ellensburg, and in his first year at Kennewick, that team went to the 3A state quarterfinals, semifinals, and really gave O'Day a tough game, one of its toughest games of the season. Now, that Kennewick team, there are still key contributors back from that 2019 run. It's a team that you know, escaped the spring season with just one loss, a last second 1-point loss to Kamiokin in their last game of the season. The Lions return Bronson Childs, the younger brother of Jagger Childs from that 2019 team. He moved to Idaho for the year. He's back. He's just an enormous defensive end who, you know, plays tight end as well. There's a lot of a lot of coaches will tell you, and you'll hear, when you have a running back in Miles Mayofsky, who's their fullback and linebacker, you just have to enter the conversation a contender. I look at what Randy has done, Affolter has done at Kennewick. That's a team that, again, has to get out of a really tough league in the MCC that's going to be, you know, really tough this year, playing 4A sites, Chiawana and Kamiokin. But you know, Kennewick is that top 3A team out of that league, and so long as they get out of that district crossover, look out, because these guys have state tournament experience and tons of experience and physicality that I think will bode well for them in the playoffs this year, just as it did in 2019.
I don't know how many people realize how good a football player Miles Mayofsky is. I'm telling you, if I were to take a list of the top 10 football players in the state, he would be on it. You've talked to coaches that him alone make them a MCC co-favorite, make them a, you know, state contender. And he's a senior. So he's going to be motivated to go out on a winning note. You know, I that Bethel team that they beat in the quarterfinals coming over here, that was a really good Bethel team. That was a big win. That was a big catapult type win for this program and Randy in his first year. And so I would not be surprised at all if Kennewick won that league, came over as a top seed, had a couple home playoff games, and made a huge bit of noise in the state playoffs in 3A. It's a fun team, and we all know that. You and I both know this, talking to him pretty regularly. Randy Affolter is as good as it gets, in terms of just giving it to you straight. And it's a fun program to cover.
No, it is, and let me correct the record from when I said Bronson Childs at 6'5", 220 as a defensive end. He's not. He's a linebacker, and this team is going to be able to get stops. And that's what made the Lions so effective and able to hang with teams like O'Day in 2019, is you bring back a linebacking core with Bronson Childs, with Miles Mayofsky, and then two sophomores that they're really excited about in Dylan McIntyre and Aiden Metz. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned Aiden Napik on the line, who's got, you know, basketball footwork, just a tremendous defensive lineman. So that size, that defensive presence is just going to be really hard to stop. That's why they're my favorite out east to threaten for a state title in a big school classification. So moving on to our fifth and final, last but not least, storyline entering the high school football season 2021-2022. I'll ask you this, Todd. There's a lot of first-year coaches in this state. We've talked about coaching turnover and just how tough it's been to be a high school football coach throughout the pandemic. There's some pretty big programs that have had a changing of the guard since the last football game was played in the spring. which first year coach, in your view, is going to be the best equipped this year and is going to have the smoothest transition, put together the nicest season? You know, we're looking at Hockenson, a 2A state power. Rick Steele retires. The only, you know, the first head coach at that school, Stellicum. You know, Mark Miller takes over for Colby Davies, who left to join Portland State staff. John Eagle left at Camas to join Portland State staff as well, and they have an interim coach in Jack Hathaway, who has head coaching experience. And then Puyallup, Meade, Eastlake, Nacelle. We'll go down the list, Todd. You can, I'm sure, pick up where I left off. But which coach, which program do you think will have the most smooth transition under a new head coach?
And man, there are a lot of candidates for this, Andy. And you mentioned the gist of guys that are taking over programs that we've grown accustomed to making deep runs in the state playoffs. The guy I'm going to go with is kind of leading a team that I think could emerge out of the 4A Kinko. That's Kyle Snell. Now, Kyle Snell was the offensive coordinator under Don Bartel. Don Bartel stepped down in the spring. They didn't waste any time in promoting Kyle. So they have the continuity piece to it. But it's funny, you know, going to some of these, going to football 7-on-7 tournaments and other football events this summer, there was just, you know, I didn't get a chance to see them live, but I talked to a fair amount of coaches that watched Eastlake or faced Eastlake and raved about them. And yeah, the Kinko 4A is a league that's going to be breaking in a lot of first year starting quarterbacks, and Eastlake's included in that. But they're big athletes, and they have a lot of baseball players out for football. So they're the team that walks off the bus, Andy, and you just go, oh my gosh, how are we going to contend with Eastlake Wolves? I mean, they've got 6'3" and 6'4" kids running routes and running the football. And
hey, Grady Robison ain't walking through that door.
No, Grady Robison's not walking through that door, but they've got a lot of really good seniors and juniors. I like this team. I like what Kyle Snell has, you know, they've taken more of a, you know, first year coaches sometimes say, okay, we got to get, you know, drill and we got to get out there and repetition. And, you know, he has taken this group, a self-starting group, and done a lot more teaching and classroom work and just, you know, a lot more of a, you know, less physical type approach, just reminding these guys of concepts and things. And you know, they had a great spring. They went undefeated. I don't know if a lot of people remember that. In that shortened Kinko league season, the pods that they played in. So I just think his approach has been sort of relaxed. I think they've had a good summer circuit and they've had a good training camp. I like this team. They got a fair amount of guys back on both sides of the ball. Good experience, good skill position guys. And as we know right now, there's really not a slam dunk favorites in the 4A Kinko. If I had to put my money on it, it would be Bothell just based on pedigree and Tom Boehner, and I'll never underestimate that group up there. But we know to never underestimate 4A Kinko. And if they can get rolling and come out of that 4A Kinko with a 1 or 2 seed, I think that sets up well for Kyle Snell and that group to do some damage in the state playoffs.
No, you're right. There's certainly opportunity there. It looks like, you know, based on how good the Kinko's been, just from purely a talent standpoint, this appears to be somewhat of a dip year. You know, can't obviously, like you said, overlook, you know, the programs like the Woodinvilles and the Bothells that just consistently put together winners every year. I look at two of those programs undergoing transitions down in Southwest Washington. When you talk about programs that just put together winners every year, Hockenson at the 2A level that won back-to-back state titles in 2017 and 2018, then went to the state semifinals in 2019. Luke LeCount, the defensive coordinator through those years, takes over the program after Rick Steele retires. He retained every coach on his staff, every coach. He had to replace an O-line coach because that's what Steele's specialty was. That's the position group that he was in charge of. But every other coach comes back, as well as a lot of talent. You know, I look at things like that, and just coaches up top, the ability not only for them to lead, but for them to be able to pass off responsibility and trust certain parts of the team with people who are capable, like you know, in LeCount's case, Josh Racanelli is the offensive coordinator. He's the architect of that offense that helped Hockenson rise to statewide prominence. But you know, defense helped that team win and go undefeated in the spring. And so I look at a team like Camas with interim coach Jack Hathaway. You know, Hathaway had been at Camas for like 7 or 8 years as an offensive assistant under John Eagle. At 7 or 8 years, he might have been, and I think he was, the least tenured coach on that staff. And everybody else comes back. John Eagle's right-hand man, Dan Kilty, still man in the defense. You know, Alan Jones is still man in the running backs. You know, Coach Phillips. I mean, the list goes on. You know, I look at the paper makers that, you know, don't have any maybe majorly splashy players like a Jake Blair, who's now at Oregon State, a Jock Balala Birdsell, who's now at Nevada, running back, or a Caden Steven, who's at USC, who was on the line a couple years ago. You know, they don't have any guys that have that type of buzz around them coming into the season. But they do have 9 players who played in the state championship in 2019. And with that much continuity on both the coaching staff and the roster, I look at those two programs in Hockenson and Camas as ones that I trust most out of that big group to just kind of take the torch and run.
Well, just hey, I wanted to make a quick correction. Kyle Howler has been hired as the interim coach at Steele-Com. I know we mentioned Coach Miller, who's also was going to continue to be on staff. But I think, you know, the three guys that we brought up, Andy, I mean, there's a theme here. It's continuity. You know, none of those teams went outside and hired somebody that would have a completely different football philosophy than what was, you know, what was experienced or what had won them games or what had captured them state championships. So in Eastlake's case, obviously they haven't won a state championship, but in Camas and Hockenson's case, yes. So that continuity piece, I think, is important. You know how it is in football. There's a lot of really good coaches that struggle their first year just, you know, establishing a new culture and install and just getting to know the guys and getting a feel for what their guys can do. So, but we have a lot of new coaches at really good programs that were hired from within this year. So it's going to be interesting to see if a lot of those coaches can keep that run of success going.
Yeah, it's a tough year too to take over a program with all the COVID protocols and hurdles, and it'll really help with coaches that have actually were able to go through that in the spring. I don't envy any coach that took over a program in 2019. I do not envy them one bit. And not to say it's going to be a cakewalk for first year coaches this year, just from a COVID standpoint, but you know, as we said at the top, as we talked about extensively when we talked about how this virus looms over this season, you know, it's not going to be easy either. So lots of capable folks in charge of lots of great programs. Todd, thanks for doing this. This isn't going to be the last of our podcasts previewing this football season. We'll have a big extravaganza podcast upcoming before the first game of the high school season kicks off on Thursday. Todd, high school football is right around the corner. I don't know, man. I'm excited. I'm about to stop this recording and head out to a jamboree. So you're finding me at a time where there's just a lot to be excited for, and you know, a football season that's just kicking into full swing here.
Well, if you can't wait for regular season football, just remember our neighbors to the east, Idaho and Montana, are kicking off their first full weekends here the last week of August. So there's a lot going around in the Northwest, and it's going to get very, very busy for us in Washington very, very soon.
Yeah, state of Oregon too. So very much so. Scorebooklive.com/Washington is your home for high school sports coverage across this state. The SB Live Sports app is the home for all of our coverage as well. Get it on the go for free wherever you download apps. Stay tuned for the rest of our high school sports coverage entering this season and the rest of our preview content. Subscribe to this podcast. And again, thank you so much for listening and tuning in to another episode of the SB Live Washington podcast. For Scorebook Live Washington, I'm Andy Bueller, and he's Todd Mills. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. Thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. This song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.